life without hope. Now that's living hell.
This is what real hope looks like. This is the word that those hopeless people need to hear. This is the word that 3,000 people that try to commit suicide today, the 3,000 that will try to commit tomorrow, 3,000 that will try to commit on Monday, this is the word that they need to hear, is that there is hope.
It's real superpower. It's hope. There's hope. Bring me to hope.
Hey everyone, happy new year, happy 2019, welcome to the retro, what is going on over there? Welcome to the Retro Gamers Podcast, Larry here.
And Anthony is virtually here. It's like 3D, but not.
And welcome to Victims and Villains. This is the show where we talk nerd, we talk hope, and we speak nothing else. I am your host, I am your host, Captain Nostalgia.
What's up, Josh?
What's up? It's nice to have your virtual presence here.
Thank you. It's great to be here. You know, it's almost like the real thing.
Anthony can't see. Josh can't talk. I can barely hear anybody. We're all doing good.
Yay. Oh, there you are.
Hello. Oh, you have your eyes adjusted yet?
No, I think I just went blind in my left eye. Ooh, man, well, that was intense.
For those who may be very, very confused right now, if you tuned in a couple days ago, we settled the contest that Josh plagued me with all year in 2018.
Thank you, Josh.
And I got another one to plague you with in 2019.
Please remember, I'm going on a budget now, so.
Yeah, thanks to you, Josh. Larry is definitely broke.
I have no choice. So we revealed the tallies from the year-long retro game virtual boy contest. And just to reiterate,
I got them if you guys want me to read them.
Oh, you got? Okay, yeah. So read off Anthony's and read off mine and let people know why. Anthony's finally playing with a virtual boy.
Anthony?
Oh, no. Not playing with it at all.
All right. So if you guys are
new, like this, maybe.
All right, so if you guys are new, at the beginning of 2018, I challenged both of these guys to a contest to see who could buy the most retro video games. Whoever spent the most had to buy lost, and they had to buy the winner who spent the least a virtual boy to do with whatever they wanted to. And so at the end of last year, Anthony walked out, ended up spending $1,012.37. While Larry spent $2,611.68.
Yeah.
Wow. There are just no words.
That sounds about right.
Yep. And as a result, and I will say, I congratulated Larry for holding up his end of the bargain. He purchased and handed off a lovely virtual boy for my enjoyment.
I will say, though, I think that thing's a lot smaller than I anticipated on it being.
Well, yeah, I mean, they don't even consider it like a home console. They consider it more of a like a handheld, right?
It is in the handheld family.
Yeah,
even though it's got legs.
So if you're right, so if you think about it, Josh, it's actually the largest handheld gaming system ever created. I mean, look at this thing.
It's even bigger than the Switch.
It's a lazy boy.
Yeah, it's the lazy boy of handheld games. And lazy describes the gaming on this very, very well. So I am the proud owner, which I'm very happy about. So I would like to thank you, Josh, for this wonderful award. And, without you, this wouldn't have been possible. And I'd like to thank Larry for not knowing when to keep his credit cards in his pocket where they belong.
I know now.
Yeah. And, and more importantly, I'd like to thank myself for being the awesome person that I am and for also showing restraint, not only in the United States, but all around the world to make sure that I won this contest. So,
yes.
Oh, and by the way, I will, like I said, live on Facebook, I will fulfill my promise of destroying this beautifully disgusting machine. But I haven't decided where and when or how. What do you got, Josh?
I was going to say, you should keep a small part of the of it and just use it as a trophy to remember the first Victims and Villains Retro Gamers contest. You could just stick it right in your like office space.
Wow. You know, that's a good idea, Josh, who, by the way, also, for those of you who don't know, Josh has the wonderful distinction of being the first ever Miss Retro Gamers 2018.
It plagued my YouTube channel for a couple weeks, but now that we're in 2019, my prank is now fulfilled. So
thank goodness.
Oh, and we appreciate that, Josh. If you can share the link to on our Facebook page again, that would be wonderful.
Absolutely.
But, okay, so where are we going to? Where are we going this week? What are we doing? It is January 1st.
You guys want to hear the 2019 contest? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to one and all. Apparently, there's a 2019 contest. Josh, what is your proposal that Larry is going to reject now?
Ugh. All right. So this is the deal. All right. So on Victims and Villains, we cover pop culture, and a lot of what we cover is comic book themed. That's kind of where we got our start. I thought about all. My cat is probably going to knock over my light.
I have no cat.
Staring at it very intently.
There is no
light here. Good thing I have a water bottle next to me. All right, so in the world of comics, there are much sought after issues. So this is what I'm proposing for 2019. Go about your normal collecting as possible. As normal, whoever has the most rare video game at the end of 2019 has to buy a loser a system of their choice.
Ooh. So if you buy the rarest video game, you're actually the loser of the contest? Or if you buy the rarest video game, you're the winner and you get a system of your choosing?
You are the winner with a system or a gift card of like $100. Well, you guys can discuss like the logistics of it, but like you have to buy the winner something.
Okay, and who judges what's boy? Well, I was gonna say, who judges what's the rarest?
The internet. Oh. All right, so this is what you're gonna do is basically, as you guys are making the purchases, you guys have to provide like a history of the game for the show. So, say you end up getting a first edition of Pong.
Okay.
You have to provide how much the first initial run, how many units were sold were made.
Okay. Almost whoever. Like a retro spotlight.
Yes. Yeah, in a way.
Yeah.
So whoever has the most sought after and or rarest video game by the end of the year is the winner.
And gets a game or a console of their choosing.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm up for this challenge. However, I think we need to put a price tag on the reason why I say that is we need to put a price tag on what the loser has to buy is because let's say I win. I can tell Larry, hey, buy me that TurboGrafx CD for $1,500.
Yeah. And I don't have $1,500.
Yeah. So why don't we say $100?
That's what I say. Okay.
Yeah.
This contest, I could easily go over the $2,611 if I'm looking for the most rarest.
And that's a true story.
That is in your distinction, though.
This is true. Yeah.
No one lies to you or force you to spend $2,600.
I wasn't forced, but
but he did it nonetheless.
I had an Indian burn happening on the way, so exactly.
Well, I mean, Josh, I accept the terms with the spending limit. Larry, what do you say?
I'm in.
Sounds good. All right, we got a new contest. We got a 2019 contest.
Does the game have to be bought in 2019?
Yes.
No. All right, well, because otherwise I was submitting my Shining Force 3.
Yeah, no. It has to be bought in 2019. Okay. Otherwise, I can go through my archive for something as well.
Fair enough.
Like my crappy Virtual Boy.
Still two of the best games.
Josh, are you stripping for us too now?
Getting naked, bro. Starting a little warm over here.
All right, well, we'll see how this goes. I'm a little worried. All right, so we got our contest for 2019. We'll see how that goes. Everybody who's watching and listening, I'm sure you'll enjoy watching us, recap our purchases. And speaking of purchases, Larry, since I now know, that the 2018 contest is over and I've won my Virtual Boy, and it is now New Year's Day 2019, I did a little shopping.
Did you already? So now it's all negated. Doesn't matter. I feel like all the shopping you did probably wouldn't put a dent into the lead.
It definitely wouldn't have. However, I was so giddy about winning that Virtual Boy, and stores are open on New Year's Day, of course. So I was so giddy about winning that Virtual Boy that I did myself a little shopping and picked up 16 retro games. 1-6.
Oof.
So all right. I'm going to run through these really quickly as I step out of frame.
Let's see what you did.
Okay. So, and a lot of these are like, none of them are like break the bank kind of games. So the first thing was, I was in New York, as we all know, last week at Game On with Larry, went to both locations.
And I have to say this, I was very happy you were finally able to come into New York. I was finally happy you were able to see, like, all joking aside, to see Game On, to see where I spend a lot of time, actually.
And money.
But also see, like, Brian, Tristan, the guys who run it, Al, Jay, who help out. It was just, in a weird way, I don't have any siblings, but I felt like finally, letting my brother see, all this magic that I've been a part of in 2018. So I'm really happy you were able to make it there. I think they were happy that you were able to make it there as well.
Oh yeah.
I was going to ask, does that mean you're taking me there next time I come up?
I'd love to. Absolutely.
Absolutely. You need to go. Yeah. And you know what? You're absolutely right.
I
love both of the stores. A special thank you to Brian and Tristan and Jay. You guys were really awesome. It was great to meet them. It was great to meet them. Got a wonderful business running there. I know they have they mentioned like an anniversary party coming up soon. So
yeah,
for those of you who are in the area, definitely keep an eye out for that. And take part in that. But yeah, they were really great. I loved it. And I will go back there every time I come back to New York.
And you had perfect timing, Ant, because they wheeled out this
gorgeous
Popeye arcade machine. That they just picked up.
Beautiful.
And I love Popeye. Beautiful. I love that game.
I love that game too.
Oh, it was awesome. That was in the Smithtown location.
I love that game, even though that Popeye game was created because they couldn't use Popeye in Donkey Kong.
This is very true. Donkey Kong was supposed to be Popeye.
That is correct.
Did you know that, Josh?
No.
Yeah. I did not. So imagine Donkey Kong as you know it today. But Donkey Kong as Brutus or Bluto, depending on what era you're talking about.
Correct.
And Jumpman being Popeye, obviously, and Pauline being Olive Oil.
Yep, that's exactly what it was.
And fun fact, Popeye was my first word.
Really?
Absolutely. I'm still trying to figure out how a two-syllable word was my first word, but my parents have been telling me that, so I believe it.
It happens.
It probably wasn't Popeye. It was probably something like, Popeye.
Or was it like Popeye's, like the chicken place?
I don't think they were around 30. I don't think they were around 38 years ago, almost 39 years ago.
I know. All of a sudden, they just drive by.
Popeye's.
But he was my favorite cartoon growing up. So,
did you just hear what he said? His next word was fried chicken.
Exactly.
I got a story about KFC. I'll tell another time. So.
Oh no, let's not talk about that one. I know that story.
You do know that story.
Yeah. But that's not video game related. Anyway, so going back to my shopping spree that I did. So I picked up a few things. One is this one was actually we'll count this as like a 2018 purchase, even though it was $5. So Larry's store that he goes to, Game On, they sell these random Nintendo cartridges where the labels are missing. So for $5, you buy the cartridge and then you don't find out what's on it until you play it. So Larry and I both bought a $5 cartridge.
Yep.
I already forgot what game Larry got. Larry, do you remember what you got?
I got a game I already own, Top Gun.
Larry got Top Gun, that's right. And then I got, this game was Akari Warriors, which
nice.
Which was a fun game.
Now, all that's right? The second time that I bought a mystery card. The first one I bought was Elmo's ABCs and...
Elmo!
Like, yeah. And like Grover's Hide and Seek.
Great, that's all you had to say. The magic word.
I forgot Elmo was here.
Give himself Elmo's a headache. Always here.
Yeah, that's what worries me.
Elmo's watching you. Brother?
Anyway, moving on to the Genesis. This game I've been trying to track down for a while, and I wanted it in the original box, and I managed to get it. But arguably the best NHL game ever created on Sega Genesis, NHL 94, which they still do tournaments for, by the way, all over the world.
There's a local store here in town where I live. I've seen that like all the time. All
right. Well, and you have a Sega Genesis, so you need to get your hands on this one. It's not expensive, but it's arguably the best hockey game ever made. So just a heads up on that. Moving on to the PlayStation. Now, I've said on the show before, I'm trying to collect if I can get everyone, I will get everyone. But I'm trying to collect every wrestling game on every console that I have, because I like the idea of seeing the evolution of wrestling games, since I've been a big wrestling fan my whole life. So I filled that in a lot on this trip, or on this shopping spree, I should say. So for PlayStation, the original WWF SmackDown.
Ooh, that's a good one.
That is a good one. That's what got me to buy a PlayStation. That broke my this Nintendo. This one was great. The second one
was amazing.
And got to it, yeah.
Yep. And then moving on to the Nintendo GameCube, we have WrestleMania 19.
Very good.
And we have Day of Reckoning 2.
That's a really good one. That's the one I believe that plays just like the old N64 games.
Yeah, this was the one. Yeah, this is the one where they kind of copied the N64 style. So definitely worth getting. Definitely worth getting. Moving on to the PlayStation.
And Stacey Keebler on the cover. Don't hurt either.
Yeah. That helps a lot. Three more wrestling games on the PlayStation 2. We got Legends of Wrestling, the first one.
Very cool.
Legends of Wrestling, the second one.
Very cool.
And TNA Impact.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So it was their first game, you know, trial and error. It was also their last. also on PlayStation 2, I had loaned my copy out to a friend of mine and never got it back.
Sorry.
So I was very happy to pick this up for a relatively low price, and the original Kingdom Hearts.
You loaned that out and someone didn't return it to you?
That is correct.
Who is this person we're going to find and politely talk to?
I will not say on the air. Thank you.
Okay, fair enough.
Moving on. Also on PlayStation 2, Backyard Wrestling. Don't try this at home.
Which we all did.
Which we all did. No comment there. moving on to Xbox, we have Gauntlet 7 Sorrows. Gauntlet games are just fun.
Yeah, they really
it looks fun.
You can't go wrong with a Gauntlet game. You know, the entire series was designed to eat quarters.
It's really, really good.
Yeah. The original arcade game was literally designed to eat quarters, but it was able to successfully flourish itself to modern systems. Not recently, correct. But...
This is what I love about on here with you guys.
Hold on. I'm sorry. What, Josh?
So this is what I love about coming on here with you guys is always learning about new games that are like 20 years old. But
yeah. Oh, by the way, 16 games I purchased, I can guarantee you I'll play maybe one of them, if I'm lucky. WWF Raw, or WWE Raw at this point, for the Xbox. I had Raw 2. I didn't have Raw 1. Frank Messina of the Better Half will appreciate this, because we never made it to this game. Even because we were so bitter from how the first game ended. But Frank, I'll have you know that I now own Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance 2.
Yes. It's about time. Wonderful series.
And then moving on to a more recent system.
Okay.
Even though it's not a retro game, you know, we are talking current games now, and this is close to current.
Josh is on to lose it.
This is a game I've never played and always wanted to. Because I hear you die a lot, and that could be fun. But Dark Souls for 360. Ooh. Now, I know they remastered this, but, I wanted to get the original one.
Yeah.
Okay. Last.
Good Lord.
I saw these games hiding somewhere, and I was floored just by the cover art. Because, Josh, you'll appreciate these a lot. I'm a big Marvel fan. Huge Marvel fan, right? And Marvel in like the 80s, early 90s, their games weren't that, you know, well made. Thank you, LJN. But these games were released on the Tandy 1000, 3000 computer.
Oh, those. Okay, yes.
Yep. And they were also IBM compatible. So you can play these on any IBM.
You're going to love these, Josh.
IBM compatible computers. So the first one I want to show is The Punisher. Now, this box is in phenomenal condition. This was really well taken care of. You can see. And then I'm going to open these guys up really quickly just to show off. You know, because we're talking about, what are these? Are these five and a quarter? Is that what we called them?
Five and a quarter.
All right. So five and a quarter floppy disks.
Remember those?
Wow. So
Josh was too young. So
no, I remember them.
Okay. So three floppy disks for the game.
Do you know?
An expanded memory floppy disk that you needed to input first.
Really?
To expand the memory of the computer so you can play the game.
Good gosh. You know, I finally figured out why every time you'd start an old computer up, you'd get that like... Because it was trying, like the read head was backing itself up, but it would hit the end and on purpose would keep clicking because those had 40 tracks on them. So all these years I kept thinking it was broken. Not so much.
Not broken. And just so you know, this game for hardware requirement, I love this. It has the booklet in it for the requirement and stuff. It requires a Tandy or an IBM, right? The game requires a color monitor with a CGA 4 color, EGA 16 color, or Tandy 16 color, or VGA 16 color graphic system. It must have at least 512 kilobytes of RAM. And at least 640 kilobytes of RAM for Tandys.
Okay.
Yeah.
Josh, did you have a Tandy, Josh?
I did not. I did not even know about it. But is there like actual like modern ways to play these, or did you just buy them for nostalgia?
I bought them for nostalgia. I do not have a way to play these. I have a Commodore 64, but these won't work on a Commodore 64. So if I ever buy an IBM PC for the hell of it. Maybe that'll be what I have Larry buy me this year at the end of the year when I win this contest, the new contest.
A, why are you assuming you're going to win? And B, I don't know if that counts as a console. We'll have to talk about that later.
Anyway,
we have 52 weeks.
Player manual in excellent condition as well, all the way through. Looks like it really looks like it hasn't been touched.
No, look at that. It's pristine.
Yeah. So that's The Punisher. And now the last game is, again, Marvel related. And this was considered like one of the best games ever created for this particular property. So when I saw it there, I was like, oh, wow. Okay, this is a must. But X-Men 2.
Wow.
For the Tandy and the IBM PC. And it's just.
Is that Jim amazing. Lee art?
What?
Is that Jim Lee art?
I don't think so. I don't know if this is Jim Lee or Chris Claremont. I don't know. Or was he just a writer? I get confused with all that stuff. Claremont was just a writer. I'm not sure. But anyway, so that's the box art, right? And then the back with the Watcher on it. Cool. And then some of the gameplay. And if you look at the screen here, right, you can see that there were 15 different characters that you could play in the game. Which back then is unheard of.
Yeah,
15
right?
playable characters, which is awesome. And again,
let alone the I don't think the Watcher. I don't even know who the Watcher is. I don't think he's ever appeared in any other home console video game.
Well, no, the Watcher usually will appear in a console game, but not, he's not a playable character.
Oh, okay.
So, and then of course the discs, which again, great condition, and then last but not least, the instruction booklet, which looks like a comic book.
Yeah,
looks flat out like a comic book. Again, great condition. I do love that in the beginning, they give you a comic book.
Oh, wow.
That tells you the setup for the story.
That's a throwback, too.
Yep. It gives you the setup for the story in black and white, but still, And then it follows the for those of you who know comic book storylines, it follows the Fall of the Mutants storyline, which was one of the arguably one of the greatest storylines in game in comic book history. I do love the fact that they have Professor X smoking a pipe and standing, which is always fun. Hey, you know what? He's got to stand. And then they have like descriptions for each character, all 15 characters that you can play. So this was by far my favorite grab out of the whole bunch, even though I cannot play it. I would love to be able to find this online somewhere where I can download it and play it, because as an owner of the original game, I can legally download it and play it now. That was it. That was everything I grabbed. Nice. Any questions?
Yeah. So about back up to the Punisher, man. Is that like
do you need oxygen?
Is that a Dolph Lundgren tie-in game?
That is not a Dolph Lundgren tie-in game. It's also not a Thomas Jane tie-in game, nor a John Bernthal tie-in game.
Who's the other guy? Who played in the sequel? The movie sequel?
Thomas Jane?
Ray Stevenson.
Oh.
That was Warzone.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And then Thomas Jane was the 2004.
I like that movie. I like the first one.
Yep. So that was my shopping spree.
Boy, that's a heck of a run, would you say,
yes,
Josh?
Yeah, especially the way that you ended on those last two. Like, I've never even heard of that system. And, like, I mean, just the box art is beautiful. Like, the characters that you get to play with are astonishing, especially given the time period it takes place at. And I kind of want to be able to see if I can find some now.
Yeah, no, that's definitely worth owning. I was like, shocked when I saw those there. So much so that I saw the X-Men one and grabbed it and was, like, you know, just staring at it and going through it. I completely missed the Punisher one that was right underneath it, and somebody turned around and
said, "You had to pick up and grab to get the X-Men."
Yeah, exactly. Didn't even see the Punisher one. I was just like, "Ooh, X-Men!" and then the guy told me, "He's like, did you see the Punisher one?" And I'm like, "Where?" He's like, "You pushed it aside to grab this." So,
very funny. But you know what you should do, and I think you're going, because you said you really bought it. I mean, A, nostalgia. B, the artwork. Just find one like a one of those shadow box frames. Throw it in there. I'd put it on the wall.
That'd be very cool to have. Good idea. Larry, look at you starting off 2019 with a good idea.
The hamster's back on the wheel for now. We'll see what happens in a couple weeks.
He's on the wheel for like the first 3 days of the year, and then that's it. Yeah.
Then he gets until weekend. He sees the credit card statement from the 2018 contest.
Exactly. No, he already knows. He's already seen it. In 2019 is a whole different ball game. Things are going to look. My 2019 is going to be a positive 2019. You know, Josh, you know, let's kind of, this is a hybrid episode if you haven't realized yet, because those listening on Victims and Villains is like, there's a lot of video game talk right now. So we're going to be kind of flopping back and forth a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from the Victims and Villains side, and I'm going to show some of my games in a moment, but, you know, from the Victims and Villains side, Josh, I do want to say, and I know with the retro gamers, this part I know may sound like I'm going to be a little preachy, but I'm not. But I mean it all in a good way. And Josh, I think you'll like to hear this. Like, I'm really focused on a positive 2019. My 2018 was miserable. So because I lost a contest and I lost a system that I lost in a hurricane and it's going to be destroyed in front of me. Right, Ant?
I'm sorry. It makes me smile. I can't help it.
I don't know why that's
funny. I'm trying to look serious here, but I can't. As you explain it, my grin just gets bigger, which means I'm truly a horrible person.
My heart is two sizes down, and I mean,
my wife and I, we were talking about this contest today, and she heard the totals, and I was like, well, technically, it was a joke, like, but they took the contest seriously and they ran with it. So technically speaking,
it's our fault.
Yeah, you guys did this to yourselves.
I didn't do anything to myself. I spent like I always spend.
And I apparently have a shopping problem I will be fixing in 2019.
Yeah, 2019. It's the year of positivity. Turn it around.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We can all turn it around.
Less spending.
I will positively destroy that virtual boy.
Less spending, less eating, and more mental positivity. Before we get into, because Josh, you know, we're going to talk about Castlevania here in a little bit and some things that we plan on doing in January. The stuff I got actually is more Christmas gifts. Because the stuff I bought, well, actually, you know what? I can show.
Now that I think about it, I think, Josh, you'd get a kick out of this.
Bear with me. I know I'm off mic and off camera. Give me just a couple seconds.
I will miss you. Well, Josh, why don't you really briefly talk about the victims and villains portion at this moment?
Yeah. So victims and villains is, while he's getting it ready, this is we really wanted to start out 2019 talking about Castlevania. Castlevania is something that was one of the earliest connections to the brotherhood between victims and villains and retro gamers. And we really we had so much media and so much content that was released between October when the season dropped on Netflix till now that we're just finally starting to get ahead. And we really wanted to talk about, started off on the right note. So we're talking about two TV series to start out 2019. We're talking about Castlevania and Titans. And you guys want to let me take the wheel for a second? Let's play some trivia.
You know what?
All right,
why not? I'll show the stuff there in a little bit when we head back to
retro. We'll jump back to retro gamers later.
All right, so it's basically going to be two questions. And if you guys have not seen the second season of Castlevania, this is your official spoiler warning, because we are jumping into minor spoilers for this. As the episode progresses, develops, there will be much more spoilers down the road. So hit pause. Go watch the 8 episodes, come back, hit play. But this is my first, so first off, before I get into this, I found this was really interesting. I wanted to talk about the two new characters that are introduced in this season. You have Carmella and, I'm going to butcher this guy's name, Alucard. That's him.
Alucard. Okay. Yep.
Alucard.
Yeah.
You got it.
So
he was in the first season, just in the last episode.
Oh, that is right. I forgot about that. Mm-hmm. But
we had a lot of new characters in this season.
We do. And we'll get into jumping about talking about this. I found this was really interesting. The character of Carmella in pop culture actually predates Dracula by nearly 30 years.
Ooh. That's interesting.
Yeah. So when Dracula kind of came along, he really, his legacy overshined the Carmella, but she has been like this just continuously a force that's been in multiple pop culture mediums. Her prey is it's actually a novel by Joseph Sheridan LeVue. It's a French name, so I probably butchered that. Maybe you're all right. 1871 was when the series came out, and it's 26 years, so she has been predates him, and she basically is primarily most of her victims are primarily female, and she has a lot of lesbian traits, which I found was interesting, especially kind of given the time that she she was developed, late 1800s. I think that that was a kind of just something cool that I kind of came across that I wanted to share. But my trivia is this: two questions. Which video game did Carmella make her debut for the Castlevania franchise?
Okay.
I've got a guess. I'll make a guess.
Go for it.
I'm going to say Bloodlines.
And I'm going to say Symphony of the Night.
Simon's Quest.
Part 2. Ooh.
Wait a minute. Where in Simon's Quest was she?
I don't know. But
she's probably one of the villagers.
I've played through that a million times. Wow. Yeah, that's interesting.
Simon's Quest.
I believe you. You don't have to prove it.
Okay. Well, let's go for which... All right. Alucard also made his debut in this season for a larger portion of it. Which video game in the Castlevania series did he make his first appearance in?
Castlevania 3.
Yeah, I'm going to say 3. Yep.
Yep. And you got, for bonus points, do you want to tell me which video game in the series he's most well known for?
Symphony of the Night.
That's it.
Finally, this is the third time Josh has done a trivia with us. The first time he asked us about 274 questions. The second time,
yes. He asked I remember that one.
Questions that were above and beyond anyone, any casual gamer. Josh, these questions were awesome. I like these. Yes. This is not just my positivity. This is me actually saying I had a shot at this, and I'm shocked. I do want to go back to Castlevania too, not to play it, but to figure out where Carmilla showed up.
Okay.
I mean, I think you should go back and do it, and because you promised your listeners you would play through it, start to finish.
Well,
yeah. When's that happen?
I lost the Virtual Boy. The world loses Castlevania 2.
No, the world didn't lose Castlevania 2, because remember, one of my trips to Japan, I played through the whole damn thing.
You did, actually, yes. this season, this Castlevania 2 season, and I'm going to be upfront, you know, I did watch it. I watched it when it debuted back in October, but I did watch it, and I loved this season. I thought, and we're going to get into it, I thought some of the I'm watching it for two reasons now. One is to see the tie-ins to the video game, because the series is based on Castlevania 3. But now that I'm like invested in it, now I'm into like with the story arcs and the characters and really getting into it. And beyond that, it's just gorgeous to watch. The animation is still top notch.
I agree with that. No, the animation is really, really good. And I just finished watching it, full disclosure, I just finished watching it on my plane ride home.
No, good. Now it's fresh in your memory.
Because I wanted it fresh in my mind. If I had watched this back in October, I wouldn't be able to talk about anything.
We'll see how I do today.
No, see, you know what? Once you hit 40, the first thing that goes, right here.
I'm staring at it.
Yeah, I know you are. Good luck. at least I still look pretty. No, But you know, I watched it, and I have to say, like, my reactions were surprisingly mixed in places, and I wasn't expecting that. So there were parts that I thought were really strong, and then there were other parts that I thought were a little lacking. The animation, though, I agree with you. The animation was fantastic. I did enjoy the stylistic nature of it. The anime-like look to it was good, even though it wasn't like it was anime-ish, but not really. You know what I mean? Like, and I feel like I hear you. Yeah, so
yeah, it's a Western feel to it.
Exactly. So, but I thought, you know, but I thought it looked, I thought it looked beautiful. It really did. The animators really like the backdrops. Like, I spent like while watching scenes, I spent a surprising amount of time really focusing on the backdrops, the backgrounds, and how they played with shadow and what they animated in the backgrounds, because they really set the scenes nicely in a lot of these locations, and you got a lot of good depth and everything like that in the animation itself. Before we get into like the story and everything itself, Josh, what are your thoughts?
I think you nailed it. I agree more with Anthony than I do with Larry. I think that the first season was so concentrated on Trevor trying to find the speaker's daughter that you knew that Dracula was kind of in the distance, but you didn't really, it was really setting him up for what was coming in this season. And it just kind of felt so focused and narrow. And I enjoyed that. And this one, they expanded the world, but I think that they might've expanded it just a little bit too far. Okay. In certain portions, I think that the animation, like you said, Ant, I think you hit it right on it's beautiful. The backdrops to that, there's so much detail, there's so much depth and richness to this animation. I've really enjoyed that. It's one of the reasons that I still love getting excited about DC animated movies, is because I think that the animation that they bring to that is a style that is almost kind of dead to Western culture, since, you know, Pixar and even now Warner Brothers Animation and Illumination, as they're starting to really take off with the 3D dimension, a lot of like the 2D animations kind of falling into very niche groups. And I enjoy that projects like Castlevania are able to keep it alive, because I really enjoy 2D animation. So alone watching the animation, this is a gorgeous season to look at. But there is a lot about this that I it just like you said, Ant, I think you hit it's a mixed bag, because I thought that they did a really good job at doing the trio between Trevor and Cypher. Lisa
Cypher
and Cypher, yeah, Cypher and
Alucard
and yep. Trevor. I think that they did a really good job at building that bond and that foundation, and also exploring a lot of like the Belmont history, a lot of the history even too with Lisa and Alucard and Dracula. I think that they did a really good job expanding that. It was cool to see a lot of the company that Dracula keeps with this like revenge war that he started. But again, I felt like just they had all these side stories that really kind of distracted from the second one. And there was just a level of predictability to a lot of the Carmella villain, like the way that she was handled. I'm excited to see where they go in the third season, but I just kind of felt like for this season, a lot of what she was doing to kind of wage the war in her direction was really predictable.
Okay. I just very slightly, you know, and I know I know when the two of you watch shows, you probably watch it a little different than the way I watch it, because you guys are like, you know, you're kind of more in depth with television shows, you know, and you work in Hollywood, and Josh, you just love the medium. You know, I'm kind of just sitting there more for the ride. I don't mean that in a bad way. I think it brings a different element to it, because with Carmella, as you should be, because you stole my Game Boy. I mean, my Virtual Boy. So with
you don't even know the name of this.
I like, I didn't see it coming. Like, to me, she was almost forgettable. Not forgettable, it's the wrong word. But she wasn't like on my radar until like the last couple of episodes, when all of a sudden, you know, she starts pretty much taking over. The hostile takeover begins, if you will. So, I mean, I still like the character. I like the two humans that worked with Dracula. I thought they were my favorite. Of his henchmen. Because it was kind of almost like, I think they even mentioned at one point, you know, like they're Dracula's pets almost, in a way, working for him.
Yeah, and I agree with you on those guys. I thought Isaac and Hector had, like, they spent the most time kind of building their characters and their backgrounds. You got a little bit of their history on how they met Dracula and everything like that. So I really enjoyed both of those characters a lot. And I thought that they actually contributed to the second season in a good way, in a good supportive way. Whereas I felt Carmella was the only reason Carmella existed was to set up this betrayal. They really didn't spend much time on her outside of that. And so I felt because of that, she was a little one note in a way. It was really all about the coup that she was planning. We never got to see her really interact with Dracula in a way that showed the extent of their relationship. Mm-hmm. How far back they go and everything like that. And I would have liked to have known that for her, as opposed to, oh, well, she's going to betray him. Also, it made Dracula almost look a little sympathetic in a way. And when you're talking about a character whose purpose in season two was he was planning to destroy the entire human race, I get why you're trying to sympathize with him, but it's kind of hard to do that when you see what his end game is.
Yeah. And I think on the point that you're talking about with Carmella being there just to basically set up this betrayal that exists in like the last maybe 10 minutes of the episode, like the season finale for this, Godbrand's another one that is forgettable, where like when he's introduced, I think in like the second or third episode, mm-hmm. I just kind of felt like he was instantly forgettable, to where basically like he existed for a couple episodes, but they gave him so much screen time and so much attention, because a lot of those episodes were focused on Dracula's camp, whereas you kind of didn't really start to dig into Cypher and Alucard and Belmont until like the fourth or fifth episode in. There were mm-hmm. episodes that were very heavily exclusively focused on them to start with, and I gotta say, like, I don't know, like, Netflix did a great job on this season, but there were just elements of it that just kind of didn't seem as strong as the first one. And Godbrand and Camilla and a lot of Dracula's army kind of...
I get what you're saying.
Do you think, or are you trying to say that maybe, you know, the first season was 4 episodes, this mm-hmm. one was 8. Are you, like, is this show designed to be in a very short, you know, a short episode arc?
I don't think so. I just think it's what you do with it. Like, it felt like to me that they could have cut this down to 6 episodes and still delivered what they wanted. I don't think they needed the full 8. But just to counter a little bit of what Josh was saying with Godbrand's character, I liked the intention of what they were doing, because I felt like they were giving him screen time so that when he dies, it has more impact, especially with the way it happens.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't somebody that really needed a lot of screen time, because his character, there was nothing really, there was no real depth to his character. He was really kind of one note. So you know, and when they were trying to build him by showing him on screen more, giving him more backstory, there was no real depth even in that to make the impact of his death, you know, bigger. So I just think they faltered a little bit there. And then to Josh's point about the first half of the episodes, what bugged me about it too was we got all these new characters in Dracula's camp. We spent a ton of time, you know, establishing them and going through them that – it slowed down the pace of the show a little bit too much. I was like, and at the same time, Dracula became secondary to all the new characters. Now, mm-hmm. my ride through this, you know, is initially going to be Dracula against Belmont. Like, that's the driving force. And of course, and Cypher and Alucard, more Alucard than Cypher. But that's the whole thing. It's Dracula versus these guys. It's good versus evil. The fact that you brought in all of these henchmen in a way, and then Dracula's just kind of this mopey guy sitting there, you know, he shows up to throw orders around here and there, and that's really it. I feel like that just, that took away from what I wanted to see in the second season. I wanted to see Dracula in charge. I wanted to see Dracula driving things, and he really wasn't.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of that is, like, you could have accomplished better things had you told the story where it is Dracula who is solely available for this war, because at the end of the day, like, he was the one that started it. He is the one that is continuing it. You don't need all of these other subplots. You could have use all that time to better build up the trio of heroes that we have established from the first season into the second season, because when you actually get to see Dracula in action, it is one of the, if not the defining moment of the second mm-hmm. season. I absolutely loved Dracula, and the Alucard versus Dracula sequences was amazing. And you just kind of get to really see the depth of how human he is in nature, and how much Lisa had an impact on him as a wife, as a mother. And that is what I think really makes a great and memorable villain. Blah. Mm-hmm. But again, I think that you could have also told the whole Camilla storyline in as a subplot, to where she didn't even have to interact with Dracula, to where she came over and maybe their arcs eventually did in either the last episode or the penultimate episode. But this, just some of the storylines were just handled so frugally. That's a word, right?
Frivolously. You're asking the wrong person.
Frivolously. That's it. I probably still said it wrong.
That's okay. I forgive you.
Thank you.
So,
Totally agree with it. Go ahead, Larry.
No. I was just going to say, you know, that whole, to me also, what kind of, as much as you're right, some episodes I did start to lose interest, especially like when they were talking, like with the secondary characters, but the fight scenes always brought me back.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, you mentioned the fights. Mm-hmm. I mean, just those, especially the one in the library.
Yeah.
I mean, loved just, it was, it would, to me, was as like the first season, you know, in the clock tower, because the clock tower are epic levels in Castlevania 3. Yes. They're iconic levels in Castlevania games. It always seems to always be a clock tower level. Mm-hmm. But in this one, just to see how Trevor, you know, battling or trying to battle, a lot of times getting his butt whipped, but almost like in a Spider-Man moment, his mouth is always running no matter what's happening to his physical being, which I liked. I liked that a lot. You know, Trevor just seems to be the, you know, he was the, you know, the wandering drunk in the very first time we met mm-hmm. him in the first season. But those battles, and then just trying to figure out how to get with the clock tower, Dracula's tower, you know, mm-hmm. appearing, disappearing, where it's going to end up, you know, the damage that it does. That to me was really, to me, like the defining moments of the series are these epic fight scenes, because in a video game, that's what you're doing. You're fighting. Really not much dialogue. You know, the only dialogue from a Castlevania series I know is, you know, from Symphony of the Night. You know, what is a man? You know, that's about, and that's, you know, been memed 1,000 times. So I really, what sticks in my head, sticks in my memory, are those epic fight scenes, especially the one in the library.
Yeah, I agree with that. The library fight scene was fantastic. And again, Josh, to your point earlier, the fight between Alucard and Dracula at the end was just top, by far and away, like the best fight scene I think in the whole second season. Also, the fight between the three heroes and, I don't know if you want to call them the lieutenants, but those other vampire lieutenants.
Yes,
that was amazing.
That was a great one too. And in fact, I found some of those guys interesting that I kind of wanted to know a little bit more about a couple of them. I was like, but clearly that wasn't going to happen. but the fight there was fantastic. Absolutely loved that one as well. And then where was I going with this? What I also wanted to point out are the nods to the video game. Like you said, you're talking about the clock tower. The Morningstar whip, when they revealed that, was fantastic.
Yes.
Because I'm like, okay, I go, this is, because, you know, and I like the fact that, you know, we're 2 seasons into the show. It's 12 episodes in, but they're being cautious with how much they're revealing. In other words, mm-hmm. they're not throwing the kitchen sink at you. We know that there are a number of different whips that were used in the games.
Yep.
So the fact that, like, they're taking their time with them and revealing, you know, a little bit at a time, I just love that. So, so we got the Morningstar whip, and, you know, Cypher had a couple of new spells that she used, which was cool.
Yeah, I think we had the axe. I think he used the axe a couple of times.
Did he use the axe? I know the knives were getting thrown.
Oh, maybe I'm thinking of the knives, the daggers. Yeah.
Yeah, they had the daggers getting thrown a couple of times. So, you know, I like the little nods that they're adding into it, which is great.
Yep.
And again, they're not overbearing, so they have plenty to use in, you know, in future seasons. And then seeing Alucard do his thing, you know, in those fight scenes, and seeing that especially with the lance, you know, or, you know, his really long sword, which, you know, was almost like a character in and of itself during battles. I mean, that was really cool too. So I definitely give them an A+ on all, like, on the action sequences, on the video game nods, like all that stuff is really well done. The story definitely lagged in places and could have been stronger. And I just think that comes down to editing. Just, you know, you could have made it a little bit shorter, and I think it would have been a lot more impactful.
So I think that what you're going to get from the third season, I think one thing that we're kind of talking about, forgetting to talk about, or that I want to hit on it for, is how this season starts with Lisa being basically imprisoned by the church. I thought was really well done, mm-hmm. and kind of gave a little bit more backstory to her and Dracula's relationship. So I'm almost kind of curious if they're going to take the relationship of Alucard and Dracula and kind of bring that a little bit more depth for the opening of the third season, because that would be something that I would be interested in, kind of like, how did this ideology division really start to mm-hmm. begin? Was it after her death? Was it something that, you know, maybe how he reacted? Did he kind of become a deadbeat after she went? You know, where did their relationship go, either when mom was still alive or after she died? Like, so there were really interesting things that I think that you could do with that relationship just in general. Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny because I never, years ago, playing all these games for the first time, I never even thought of Dracula's wife. I never thought of Alucard's mother. And, you know, like how, because to me, for all, because the villain you fought in every Castlevania game, basically, and I'm sure there was a couple otherwise, but was always Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, like that last scene, or one of the last scenes when they're in the bedroom, like Alucard's bedroom, I think it was Alucard's bedroom, Alucard, you know, when they're having that moment at the end, I'm like, this is Dracula. What the deuce? Like, you know, like this is the person that I've been trained to defeat each and every Castlevania 2. We had to put him together to beat him again. So, you know, that I'm not saying it's bad, but it's just, I find it funny because you're right. In the beginning, when Lisa was, you know, doling out the medication, you know, and then all of a sudden they think she's a witch and stuff, which, and, mm-hmm. and you're right, with all the priests are in there and the bishop, you know, it's like, wow, this is, they're really going more in depth. And again, from a casual watcher, I thought that was like crazy and almost makes me think back to when I was playing the original games and like, mm-hmm. were that, maybe those elements were there hidden somewhere in the background. Who knows? You know, well, that, of the original series.
I don't think so. I actually think that they started to get more into lore when we got to Castlevania 3, mm-hmm. because this series was based off of the story behind Castlevania 3. Because that's when we got the idea of, that's when Lisa came into play. That's when Sypha and Alucard came into play because they were playable characters.
Yeah,
remember there were four playable characters.
I'm still waiting for one more. I'm waiting for Grant
still one
to
more
show
guy
up.
That they're not they haven't used yet. But
yeah.
That's where they really started to get in depth with the lore, and then it started to continue with Bloodlines and Symphony of the Night and all that stuff. So I don't think this was initially the plan, at least in the video on the video game side of things. I was like, but once they started establishing that, they created a depth in a story that when you see it in the TV series and you and again at the end of season two when they wind up in Alucard's bedroom, I'm like, it was such a great moment because you actually see that, you know, yes. At one point, Dracula did have human or humane qualities. It allowed him to fall in love with Lisa. It allowed him to experience that pain when she died. And it allowed him to, you know, distance himself from his son because of his vengeance. And as a result, leading to what happens at the end.
And from a, just real quick, from the video game side of it, also this season takes a lot, not only from Castlevania 3, but now moving to Curse of Darkness, which came out on the PlayStation 2 and the Xbox.
Yes.
Which is basically like Hector and Isaac, where they really come into prominence in the video game series. Now I'm curious what's, like, I'm itching for season 3 to be like Symphony of the Night. I forget where we are in the timeline. I don't know if that comes up at some point. But, like, now it's, to me, from the gamer side of it, now I'm like, all right, what game is going to be next? Castlevania 3, Curse of Darkness. Like, where are they going with this? And
I'm actually guessing it's going to be Castlevania 2, Simon's Curse, even though we don't have Simon Belmont.
Then I'm canceling my Netflix subscription at that point. But
with the way season 2 ended, my thought is, well, now you have to bring Dracula back. How are you going to bring him back? And the one that I remember prominently was in Castlevania 2. You said it earlier. They got to bring, you know, he gets brought back just to get destroyed again.
True.
I think to both of you guys' point, kind of stepping back into the series itself, not just the video game history, but I think one thing that this series does extremely well is the emotional core that has it. You know, say what about the story, but even with characters like Hector and Isaac, how do you grow to really hate your own species? I think that was a fascinating arc to see where they became. And not only that, but I thought that their character, like you guys said earlier, like they were some of the best parts of the series, even though that they weren't really the most useful portions of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it was really kind of cool to kind of get to explore like how Dracula creates his armies and his hordes. Like that was a really cool aspect to bring to this series. And it was visually one of the most stunning pieces of the series too.
You know, I meant to mention that earlier when we're talking, you know, you're right. Like, how do two humans sympathize with Dracula to the point where looking to wipe out an entire species, which probably will involve them getting wiped out, ultimate, because that was like the betrayal I'm waiting for from Dracula, because kind of Dracula kept kind of promising them stuff. But yeah, these two guys had some hard off upbringings that just made mm-hmm. them hate the human race, you know, top of the food chain. So that I found very interesting as well as from the, if you're watching on the Retro Gamers YouTube channel, we just had a little guest tale there.
It's still here. We're being invaded.
So it's all good.
Hello, Kitty.
Aww. Hey, there.
Hello.
Oh, God.
So cute.
So I said, you know, if you haven't watched it yet, go watch it.
Yep. And I think that about wrap it up for us.
Larry, you want to show what you got?
Okay.
Oh, yeah, we got to get back to that.
Yeah, I didn't know where we were at. We, you know, not like we're planning this in pre-production.
No. We don't have a one sheet. What's that?
I do want to say, so I got to say this. Separately, I bought wrapping paper, you know, because I bought some gifts for my godson. So I bought this, you know, because it was his birthday a couple days before Christmas, a couple mm-hmm. weeks before Christmas. So I bought him this, you know, very nice blue wrapping paper. All right. Fancy,
that's,
shiny.
That's lovely.
Cool.
Lovely, I should say.
Wrapped this thing, wrapped it. And then he goes to open it, and like the difficulty, which you can eventually get, but for an 8-year-old, he's sitting there trying to unwrap this gift. He's looking at me like, what is this, a joke at this point? I've never come across wrapping paper that is somewhat difficult to open.
You did that on purpose, admit it.
I had no idea.
No,
so here's some Christmas stuff that I got. A couple of them are really cool. One of them is awesome. So first, I got this very cool new Super Mario Brothers mug.
Oh, very nice.
That is very nice.
But it's a heat-changing mug. So when you put hot water in, all the red disappears, and you get all like the level.
The
new Super Mario Brothers level, yeah.
That's really awesome.
I need to invest in one of those.
It's my second type of mug that I've gotten like that. I got a Game Boy one where the screen will appear.
Oh,
with hot water, and it's Super Mario Land.
Nice.
These things I got, I'm gonna be able to play with these in a little while on my refrigerator. Super Mario Bros. Magnets.
Nice.
Nice.
That's very cool.
You know what I love about this? It's Christmas, right?
Yeah.
We're three grown adults, and Larry's showing off toys that he got for Christmas.
You have no idea.
We're never growing up.
It's Peter Pan syndrome.
So the two things.
That's a thing. I suffer from it.
So do I.
Do you not see what's behind me?
Yes, I do.
Toys.
I was going to stop buying pop vinyls, but when I was at Game On, I saw a couple cool ones.
And you bought a pop vinyl.
I will never, ever stop buying pops. I've slowed down.
Don't worry. We'll bury you with them.
Here's an awesome one.
Is it James Bond?
James Bond in the Aston Martin. And this is, I believe this is Connery.
Nice.
Sean Connery. What do you say, Mr. Bond? So, and this, I love this one. This is a New York Comic Con exclusive, New York Comic Con FYE exclusive pop. And I'm just going to cover this part up because I don't want really people to care about the price. Norman Bates.
Yes.
Black and white. Norman Bates.
I like that one a lot.
Wasn't that there when the year that I was there with you?
Oh, was this 2017?
I think it was.
It should say on the front.
It should.
No, the year isn't there, but it's because it's an FYE exclusive.
Got it.
Oh.
But it's definitely it may have been. But I like that. And then, which I will admit, my good friends over at the Retro Gamers podcast, Anthony Rippo, got me for Christmas a couple of nice items.
That reminds me. I'll be right back. You showed Josh in the world. I'll be right back.
All righty. The very cool kind of a play set.
Nice.
Sorry about the glare, but Mega Man. This is Mega Man already against Guts Man. So kind of Bomb Man, Guts Man. Very cool. And there's three more to get. And the piece de resistance. This, I got to say, 24 hours before unwrapping this gift, I saw this online and I started pricing it and I started going, if I buy this, will it count towards the total? It did not because I didn't buy it. But the fact that it just Anthony even found it and thought about it really meant a lot to me. And especially because I discovered it 24 hours earlier. WWE WrestleMania Steel Cage Challenge. It is a plug and play.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And it is the original. All right. I thought it was WrestleFest. Now, mm-hmm. for those wrestling fans out there, WrestleFest is probably the greatest wrestling arcade game of all time. Almost,
yeah.
I don't know, maybe like almost a great one of the top arcade games. Even if you weren't a wrestling fan, it was just an awesome game to play. It is not that, but it is the NES Steel Cage Challenge, which was okay. But the thought of this thing is awesome. And plug and plays, you know, they've really become popular in 2018.
Yes, they have.
It really blew up, and literally, it's what it is. A plug and play is the system. This is the whole system, joystick and all is the system, and you plug it right into the AV of your television, and well, you play. So
done and done. That's what a plug and play is.
And Larry, I'm gonna say again, Ant, thank you very much. This thing is awesome.
And just so you know, I found the other gift I forgot to bring. So there's one more coming to you.
Do you want to open it now to show me?
I don't know. Do you want to wait until you get it?
Josh,
what do you want to do?
Sure, cool.
Go for it.
Open it?
Might as well now, because then people are going to wonder.
All right. Well, then. I'm sorry I forgot it.
No, it's okay.
But I actually talked to you about this.
You are already a much different gift opener than I am, because that paper would have been already off in about 4 seconds.
I want to do more of a reveal.
Oh, there. Okay. All right.
I don't want to just show a piece of it.
That's how I see you opening any gift.
No. So this is from this one you'll really appreciate because it's from ThinkGeek, and it's a Super Mario World.
Nice.
An extra large cartridge that contains a Super Mario World T-shirt.
That is awesome.
So I showed you the Zelda one
that
I got for myself. And if you look on the back here, there's actually, they made three. Mario World, Zelda, Link to the Past, and Super Metroid, which is there.
Awesome.
So I got you the Super Mario World.
And the world now knows I'm a 2X, but I guess it obviously kind of makes sense.
Sorry.
Don't be sorry. I'm fat. No, that's awesome. That is fantastic.
This is really cool.
Thank you very much. Oh.
So you'll get that in 6 to 8 weeks.
If you mail it, use UPS or FedEx.
I was just going to say, if I mail it through the post office, I can't guarantee you'll get it.
I'll get it in 12 to 14 weeks.
If you get it at all.
Stupid post office. I blame Frank.
Yes. But yeah, so that was your last Christmas gift.
No, thank you very much. And Christmas was good. Josh, how was your Christmas? You know, we don't want to be rude here.
My Christmas was awesome. I got a lot of new podcasting sound equipment.
Oh, good.
I got some glorious movies. I got Love, Simon, which was a really underrated film this year, and Teen Titans Go to the Movies, which I love. If you've never seen it, I highly recommend it.
I started watching it on the flight, actually, to and from L.A. I just didn't get through it. Not because the movie's bad, just couldn't get through it.
I haven't gotten a chance to watch it yet, but I've heard good things.
It's absolutely bonkers, and I love it. Like it's so random and so cohesive at the same time, and there are a couple like elements within it that you're just kind of like, how did this get put into a kid's movie?
That's a lot of kids' movies, though.
Yeah, a lot of kids' movies they got to have a little bit of adult content so the adults don't get bored, because you know they're trapped in there.
I went to go see it in theaters without my wife, and when it came on video, we rented it from Redbox, and there's a certain sequence within it that is one of said sequences, and she just looked at me and she just goes, "That is absolutely awful. Why would you put that in a kids' movie?"
Why not?
Amazing.
Why not? Listen, Grinch, Jim Carrey's Grinch was supposed to have a lot more adult jokes than just the key party when the Grinch shows up. So,
mm-hmm. But they made it family friendly.
Well, wait, if you want to hear about that, check out the Better Half podcast.
As I say, that's a whole other show, Larry. This is the Retro Gamers and Victims and Villains hybrid episode, which we are winding down now since we've covered all our topics. Well,
speaking of Teen Titans, though. For the segue? Yes.
What are we segueing?
I thought Josh wanted to talk about Titans.
No.
No, that's next episode, bro.
Oh.
We're done, Larry. That's it.
Come back this Friday to Victims and Villains, and we're going to be talking all about Titans. And we have quite a amazing month planned for you guys to kick off this year. But most importantly, if you guys are listening to this right now and you or someone you know is struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression, please reach out. Suicide is currently the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. As of 2017, there are 123 suicides that occur each and every day right here in our own backyard in American soil. And when you scale back internationally, there are 800,000 successful suicides. That is one death roughly every 40 seconds. So if you or someone you know is struggling, you guys can go to our website at victimsandvillains.net/hope, where you guys can find resources that include our social media, the Suicide Lifeline, 1-800-273-8255, ways to connect to counselors, churches, and more. And where can people find the Retro Gamers?
Well, they can find us, first of all, now in the future, doing some pre-production meetings, so I know what's happening and coming up. Nice. But you can find us at really any, Facebook, Instagram, hopefully Twitter, starting this year, at Retro Gamers Podcast. Also, that's where you can find, as we almost forgot to mention, in January, we're heading back to live streaming some games, at least for January, where we are teaming up with Victims and Villains as Josh hitting the double bicep pose. There you go. Give me a little bit of that, chest, right? Double. There you go. Just like that. Ready?
No. By Zoom. Put it down.
I lift things up and then put them down.
Okay. I just pulled something. All right.
Pawns and bronze.
We're going back to playing some Castlevania games. We're going to try and play some different games than we played the first time around. We're still figuring out the schedule, but you'll see it posted beforehand, so you'll know when we're going live to play. I'm going to, tease, an amuse-bouche, if you will. I'm going to play some of the Castlevania Game Boy games, which I really enjoyed. One of them is terrible, but fun to play.
Josh, you're not allowed to play the N64 one.
I was not planning on that, for one. And also, since I fly solo for most of our content, we actually just expanded our team to include new voices to our content, which includes the likes of Eric Skrzynski. I'm blanking on everybody. Eric Skrzynski. Dallas Mora from Geek Devotions, who will be helping us with the streams, as well as Matthew Basil and John Crawford. So we're super excited to do that. And if you guys like what we stand for and want to help us produce better content, you guys can also consider subscribing to us on all of our social media platforms, YouTube, iTunes, and become a Patreon supporter. For as little as $2 a month, you can help not only support us in bringing awesome content, but you can also dictate the content for us as well. Guys, I think that's all we got for 2019.
Yeah, opener. We're gonna wrap up the episode. Link, I don't know what the hell Link's doing in the background there, but she's
Snow's not liking it. That's why she's on the chair.
Oh, Snow. Excuse me. Yeah.
Because Link is circling the table like a shark, and so she's up on the.
And Snow is just like, this is mine.
Snow's
this
just
mine.
Rubbing all over my jacket. Okay. There you go.
Snow's done. And with that, Ant, hit him with the website and the email as well for us.
You can get us. You can check out our website at www.theretrogamers.com, or you can email us at email@theretrogamers.com.
And this has been the Hybrid Gamers and Villains episode. Welcome to 2019, and we will catch you right here next week on the Retro Gamers Podcast, and this Friday on...
victims and villains. And until next time, remember to keep talking nerd, talking hope, speaking nothing else, and staying away from evil chicks named Camilla.